All right, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going to be taking a look at something kind of unusual.
Yeah.
It's not a broad legal topic, but we're actually going to focus in on just a single case name.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and you know, those of you who have spent any time reading through legal reporters or doing legal research, you know that you'll come across the same case name every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, they're related, like it's the same case, just at different stages of litigation or something like
right,
that.
Right, right. Makes sense.
But in this case, in this instance, we've got two totally separate cases, both under the same name, Commonwealth v. Collins, but they address totally different aspects of criminal procedure.
Really? So, like, what are we looking at here? Do we have, like, transcripts, briefs, anything like that?
Yeah. So we've got some excerpts that lay out some guidance for this deep dive.
Okay.
We've got a really detailed case brief for one of the decisions and then a standard brief for the other.
Yeah.
And the goal here, our mission, is to really kind of break down the different legal principles that are at play in these two cases.
Okay.
One is really focused on the nuances around jury instructions when someone's making a self-defense claim.
Interesting.
And then the other is all about how Miranda rights apply when a suspect already has a lawyer.
Hmm. Okay. So two pretty important and distinct areas of criminal procedure then.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the end of this deep dive, you know, we really hope to give all of you listening a better grasp on these safeguards, you know, these procedural safeguards and why they matter in the real world, like how they actually play out.
Yeah. I mean, it's always fascinating to see how, you know, these seemingly abstract legal principles can have such a concrete impact on the lives of real people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just thinking about it, the fact that we have two separate cases with the exact same name but dealing with such different issues
really
highlights how even within a specific area of law, like criminal procedure, there can be so much complexity.
Totally. And it's a good reminder that, like we always say, you can't just like glance at a case name and think you know what's going on.
Exactly. Got to dig deeper.
Yeah. Okay, so let's jump into the first Commonwealth v. Collins case.
Right.
This one, as we said, it's all about jury instructions.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically in a case where the defendant said, hey, I was acting in self-defense.
Okay.
Our materials here tell us that this guy, Collins, was convicted of second-degree murder.
Okay.
And his whole defense at trial was self-defense.
All right, so where do the jury instructions come into play?
Well, that's the key point, right?
Right.
There was this like really, really important error in how the judge told the jury what they needed to decide.
Oh, I see. So like a problem with how they were supposed to evaluate the whole self-defense argument.
Yeah, exactly. Like who had to prove what?
Okay, so the guidance here says that the judge basically put the burden of proof on Collins to prove he was acting in self-defense.
Got that?
But that doesn't seem right, does it? I mean, isn't that a fundamental principle that, like, you're innocent until proven guilty?
Yeah, and that's exactly where this gets tricky. You know, why is this shift in who has to prove what such a huge deal legally?
Right, right, yeah. It feels almost like common sense, right? That you shouldn't have to prove your own innocence.
Right.
So walk me through this. What's the actual rule in Massachusetts when it comes to self-defense?
So in Massachusetts, once a defendant brings up self-defense, they don't actually have to prove it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
It then becomes the prosecution's job.
Oh, okay.
To prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant was not acting in self-defense.
So it completely flips.
It flips, yeah.
Okay.
And both our podcast guidance and the case brief really stress this point. This is a like bedrock principle of Massachusetts criminal law.
So it's not just some technicality. It's like a core concept.
Yeah. And this is where it gets like even more interesting when we start thinking about the big picture, the Constitution, all that.
Right. Like,
because, you know, you're right. The idea that someone is innocent until proven guilty, that's huge.
Yeah.
And in Massachusetts, this is enshrined in Article 12 of the Declaration of Rights.
Okay.
So when a judge gives instructions that mess with the burden of proof, it's not just a mistake, it potentially undermines that whole presumption of innocence.
Right, because if the jury is given the wrong instructions about who has to prove what, it could lead them to make a decision based on a misunderstanding of the basic principles of the law.
Absolutely. And our guidance actually gives us a really good example of how this could play out. It says, and I quote, imagine the jury thinks Collins didn't prove he acted in self-defense. But that's not their job. The prosecution must prove he didn't. The instructions messed that up.
Wow, that's a pretty powerful illustration.
Yeah, right. It just shows how a tiny little change in the wording can totally change how the jury sees things.
Yeah, I mean, it really underscores how crucial precision is in legal language, doesn't it?
Oh, for sure.
Because even what might seem like a minor slip-up can have major consequences.
Oh, yeah. And in this case, the consequences were huge.
Oh, wow.
So the case brief, it tells us that this error with the instructions was prejudicial.
Right, so prejudicial in this context means.
It means basically that the error was serious enough that it probably changed the outcome of the trial.
So it wasn't just a harmless mistake.
No.
It actually m have tipped the scales against Collins.
Right. And because of that, his whole murder conviction was overturned.
Wow.
Yeah, and the court said there had to be a brand new trial.
That's a pretty big consequence,
It
right?
is. And you know what the takeaway here is?
What's that?
Our guidance really highlights this. But even if the prosecution thinks they've got this slam dunk case, you know,
Yeah.
like all this evidence points to guilt, if the jury instructions are messed up in a way that makes the process unfair, the conviction can be tossed out.
It's a reminder that procedural fairness is paramount, right?
Yeah, like the process matters just as much as the facts of the case.
Absolutely. You can't have a just outcome without a just process.
Right. Okay, so we've covered our first Commonwealth v. Collins, the one about jury instructions in self-defense cases.
Right.
Let's switch gears to the second Collins case now.
Okay, so what's the story with this one?
This one's all about Miranda rights, but with an interesting twist.
Oh.
The suspect, also named Collins, he actually had a lawyer before he was even arrested.
Oh, wow. So he was already represented before any interaction with the police. That changes things, doesn't it?
It totally does. That's what makes this case so interesting.
Okay, so lay it out for me. What exactly happened?
All right, so according to both the podcast guidance and the standard brief, this Collins was arrested back in 2000.
Okay.
The charges were related to sexual abuse.
All right.
But here's the key. Before the police even picked him up, he'd already hired a lawyer named Bond.
So he was going into the situation knowing his rights and having legal representation.
Exactly. Now, after the arrest, the police did read Collins his Miranda rights.
Standard procedure.
Right, but they didn't tell him that Attorney Bond had actually contacted them and wanted to be present during the interview.
And isn't there like a rule about that? Something about notifying a suspect if their lawyer is trying to reach them.
Yeah, that's the Mavrodakis rule.
Right. I remember learning about that in Crim Pro. So the big question here is, why didn't the Mavrodakis rule apply in this case?
That's the puzzle.
Yeah.
It seems like it should have.
Yeah, it does. So what was the court's reasoning? What made this case different?
Okay, so while the Mavrodakis rule usually forces the police to tell a suspect about their lawyer's attempts to reach them, the court here focused on a really important detail. Did the suspect already know?
Okay. I'm starting to see where this is going.
The Mavrodakis rule is really designed to protect suspects who are totally in the dark, who don't even know they have a lawyer trying to help them.
So in this Collins case, the court basically said Mavrodakis didn't apply because he already knew he had a lawyer.
Precisely. They leaned hard on the fact that Collins had already talked to Attorney Bond before he was even arrested.
Gotcha.
He wasn't just aware of his right to a lawyer in theory, he'd actually gone out and gotten one and had talked strategy.
Yeah, so his right to counsel wasn't just some abstract idea. He had actually exercised that right.
Exactly. And to top it off, there was no evidence that the police did anything to block communication between Collins and his lawyer.
So it wasn't like they were actively preventing the lawyer from reaching his client.
Right, that's an important point. It seems like the court was looking at the totality of the circumstances.
Okay, and the standard brief has a quote from the court's opinion that really drives this point home. It says, if, as here, a suspect volunteers that he has retained and consulted with an attorney regarding a police request to interview him, the conclusion that the suspect is fully cognizant of his right to consult with counsel is virtually inescapable.
Right. The court's saying, look, this guy clearly knew he had a lawyer. He wasn't clueless about his rights.
It makes sense. Once you've gone to the trouble of hiring a lawyer and discussing the situation, you're not exactly operating from a position of ignorance.
And our guidance pulls out another quote that's really relevant here. It says, responsibility for invoking Miranda rests squarely on defendants.
So the court is emphasizing personal responsibility once a suspect is aware of their rights.
Exactly. If you know you have the right to a lawyer and you've already talked to one, it's on you to say, hey, I want my lawyer here.
The police aren't obligated to keep reminding you, especially if you've already demonstrated that you understand those rights.
Right. The court basically drew a line.
Yeah.
The police have to inform you of your rights, but once you know them, it's up to you to assert them.
And the standard brief actually backs this up too. It says, Whereas here, a suspect has retained and consulted with an attorney concerning the matter under investigation, it cannot be said that the right to consult with counsel is abstract.
Right. They're saying he didn't just have some vague, theoretical right to a lawyer. He had an actual lawyer who he'd already consulted with about this very issue.
Okay, so the takeaway from this second Collins case, the Miranda one, is that it kind of narrows the scope of the Mavrodakis rule.
Right. If a suspect knows their Miranda rights, has already talked to a lawyer, and the police haven't interfered with communication, they don't have to keep reminding the suspect about their lawyer's attempts to reach them.
It's about finding that balance, right?
Yeah.
Between protecting the rights of someone being questioned by the police and also recognizing that someone who's already sought legal counsel is in a different position than someone who's completely unaware of their options.
Exactly. Okay, so we've got these two separate cases, both called Commonwealth v. Collins, and they both deal with different aspects of criminal procedure.
Right. On the surface, they seem pretty different.
Right.
But our guidance suggests there's a connection here, right? Something that ties them together.
Yeah, and it's a really important connection for law students especially.
Okay, so what is it? What's the common thread?
So both cases, in their own ways, really emphasize the importance of procedural safeguards.
Right, making sure that the process is fair, regardless of the specific crime or the facts of the case.
Exactly. But the way those safeguards play out, that's where the differences come in.
Right, the context matters.
Yeah. Like in the first case, it's all about those jury instructions.
Making sure the jury has the right information to make a decision.
Right. And that the burden of proof is properly placed. That's all about making sure the trial itself is fair.
Protects the defendant's right to a fair trial, the presumption of innocence.
Exactly. But the second case, that's more about what happens before the trial even starts.
Right, the investigation phase, the interaction between the suspect and the police.
Right, and the focus there is on Miranda rights. But the court says, look, if the defendant already knows their rights and has a lawyer, the police's obligations change.
Okay, so both cases are about protecting rights, but they operate at different points in the criminal justice process and with different considerations in mind.
Exactly. And that's why these two Collins cases are such a great example for law students. It highlights how criminal procedure isn't just a set of hard and fast rules.
You can't just memorize a bunch of rules and expect to apply them blindly to every situation.
Right. It requires you to look at the specific facts of each case, think critically about the situation.
And understand the nuances of the law, right?
Yeah, you have to know how those broad principles apply in different contexts. And the fact that we have two cases with the same name, but totally different legal issues, really shows that.
Yeah. Right?
You can't just go off the case name. You have to really dig deep.
Absolutely. It's about understanding the underlying principles, not just memorizing case names.
All right, so before we wrap up, let's just touch on a few key points that our guidance highlights, just to really drive these concepts home.
Sounds good.
Okay, so in that first case, the self-defense one, it's super important to remember that when someone claims self-defense, it's not their job to prove it.
Right, the burden shifts to the prosecution to disprove it.
Right, that's a huge distinction. And in the second case, the Miranda one, the key takeaway is that the Mavrodakis rule really only kicks in when the suspect doesn't know that their lawyer is trying to reach them.
If they already know because they've talked to their lawyer before, the situation is different.
Right. And there's one more thing I think it's worth mentioning, just quickly.
Okay.
You know, sometimes the laws in a specific state can actually be more protective of individual rights than the federal constitution.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and Massachusetts is one of those states. So like in that first Collins case, we talked about Article 12 of the Massachusetts Declaration of Rights and how it protects the presumption of innocence.
Right.
Well, that actually sets a higher bar than the federal constitution in some cases.
So Massachusetts sometimes provides even more protection to defendants than the baseline federal standard.
Yeah, it's something to keep in mind when you're dealing with Massachusetts law. Okay, so to wrap this whole deep dive up, you know, these Commonwealth v. Collins cases, they're more than just two random decisions.
They really illustrate how criminal procedure works in practice.
Yeah, and the guidance sums it up perfectly. It says, it's not just about the facts of a case, but the fairness and legality of how the legal system responds.
It's a reminder that the process itself is just as important as the outcome.
Right. So for everyone listening, whether you're a law student or just someone interested in the law, the takeaway here is simple. Don't just skim those case names.
Yeah.
Really dig into the details. You know, understand the specific facts, the legal issues, all the nuances.
It's those nuances that often make all the difference.
Yeah. Two cases can have the exact same name, but teach you completely different lessons about how the law works.
Like our two Commonwealth v. Collins cases.
Exactly. And with that, we'll wrap up this deep dive. You know, we really hope this has encouraged all of you to take a closer look at those seemingly small details in the law, because they can make a huge difference. And that's it for this episode of The Deep Dive. Thanks for listening.
See you next time.